on Discovery, a paranormal. And tonight, we're going to talk about a subject that really kind of grabbed me. And not long ago, I was kind of talking about demons in that realm. And then they mentioned Lilith. And there's a few things that I had not known about Lilith, you know, and nobody really does. Not a lot of people do anyway, because the people who crafted the Bible really didn't want to put her in there for some reason. And she is unbelievably significant to the whole story. I mean, really, she was Adam's first wife before Eve. So if it was Adam and Lilith and not Adam and Eve, that's a huge deal. So why do you think that the people who wrote the Bible, and we know how you know, forthcoming they are and transparent, why we're going to tell the greatest story ever told, but leave out some really important stuff? And not just leave it out, but vilify this woman. And man, I have a bunch of avenues to go down off of this one, man. We've got some exit ramps. We've got some byways, triways, highways. There's a lot of stuff. When you read this information, especially if you're one of those ancient alien people, and I know that you are, especially if you apply technology to folklore, right? And or mythology or whatever you want to call it. And it all comes from somewhere. Oh yeah, people make stuff up too all the time. Even now in the news, you know, you can watch that stuff and make it up as it go along. Of course, it actually all comes from somewhere. But once people are talking about something, the subject is drawn. And then the subject happens somehow. Okay. So Lilith was Adam's first woman, right? And Lilith was born, crafted from God, the dust of the earth, from the earth, right? You know, Eve, of course, who came later on, was crafted from Adam's rib, right? So, grisly. But think about this, right? It's a cool story. It's a wild story. It's a crazy story. It's Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, this blissful, beautiful place. They didn't even know they were naked, running around naked. You know that? Awesome, man. No humility even for themselves until they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Now that's deep. You know, all metaphors aside, I mean, just focusing on those words, the tree of knowledge, right? The fruit of the tree of knowledge. Okay. So some deep stuff going on in the Garden of Eden, man. And then here's Lilith. Before all that, Lilith said, and this is exactly how I understand it. I'm not embellishing at all. While Lilith and Adam were together, coupling, making whoopee, Lilith wanted to be on top. She didn't want Adam to be on top. And then this sparred this big argument about equality. And Lilith wanted to be equal. And the powers that be weren't having it. They said that, no, the women are subservient. The men are the dominant one, right? And then, boom, Lilith was cast out of the Garden of Eden, man. You know? So there's also another story on how Eve later on would look out in the Garden of Eden and see Lilith in this wasteland and feel so bad for her, you know, and keep in mind also keep in mind, keeping it in mind that you know, Lilith was described as this unbelievably beautiful, like, to your eyes. She was like, wow, man, blonde hair, gorgeous, like, wow. Of course, got to keep Adam enticed. Lucky he wasn't gay, right? But one, it comes off as a story of equality from the beginning. I mean, if this is the story, if this was the greatest story ever told, it began with a battle of equality, right, between male and female, wanting to be equal. So, you know, Muhammad, right, you know, Muslim fame, Islam, Muhammad said men and women enter heaven equally. It's in the Quran. Can't change those words around. Can't get any more meaning out of that. Men and women are equal. And then, of course, you know, other people came along and kind of said, well, that's heaven, but not here on earth. And we could do what we want on earth and torture people and make them cloak them from head to toe. And you see what religion does. You see what religion does, and people get a hold of this stuff and they use it for power. You see what it does, right? So here's Lilith. So then you've got this beautiful woman who just wanted equality, kicked out of Eden, sitting there crying outside of her rock. You got Eve in there all naked saying, hey, Lilith. And then Eve went out to hang out with Lilith naked. And they're hanging out together, man, outside the Garden of Eden. And that's like, so think of it. It's just, this kind of lights a whole bunch of things on fire in my mind. And yeah, you can say, oh, it's just some story, you know, but it comes from somewhere. And more than that, me as an investigator, when people are trying to hide something, they don't really talk about it, obviously, or there might be a little scrap that you missed something, or even if it's like a something that someone has to be mentioned in something, they just a little tiny part, because you fear what the truth will like open up. You fear, it's fear. When in the Bible, I've noticed time and time again, when they fear something, and because of fear, they have to write something in there because they can't leave people out, because they fear damnation by altering and doing that. But then instead, they very sinister, like, take that information and shrink it down to nearly nothing, so then you don't even really know about it. How many of you have known about Lilith? How many times did they preach that in Bible school? And not in a good way. If they mention Lilith at all, it's in a bad way. But all right, so check this out, right? So for thousands and thousands of years now, Lilith has wandered the earth. So she became this figure, this mythic imagination of a demon with writers, artists, poets. So it wasn't spontaneous, you know. These writers, artists, and poets, the ones who brought this information out, were paid by church entities and by people who wanted that information out there to be, she was a demon. They want them to depict her in any kind of positive way, right? So they painted her as a demon. So her dark origins really lie in the whole Babylonian demonology. They had amulets and incantations they used to counter the powers of the winged spirit. So if a woman in that town had a miscarriage, which were very common back then, they blame it on Lilith. Lilith came and took the baby away. Baby dead, right? So next, Lilith migrated to the world of the ancient Hittites, Egyptians, Israelites, and Greeks. So she made a solitary appearance in the Bible, one, as a wilderness demon shunned by the prophet Isaiah. In the Middle Ages, she reappeared in Jewish sources as the dreadful first wife of Adam. So really, that's where you start getting that story, and you start looking back into Jewish history, and then they actually talk about Lilith here and there. So in the Renaissance, Michelangelo portrayed Lilith as a half woman, half serpent, coiled around the tree of knowledge. Later, her beauty would captivate the English poet Dante Gabriel Rossetti. Her enchanted hair, he wrote, was the first gold. So this was like an unbelievable, beautiful woman that they're depicting her at that time. Part snake, right? Part woman. Who doesn't know people like that? You know what I mean? Wrapped around the tree of knowledge. Snake, tree of knowledge. And you know, it depends on how you interpret snake. Because snakes, now, you know, I'm really into the Chinese zodiac and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff there in ancient Taoism that are very much universal world, not beyond worldly. You know what I mean? Like universal, let's just say universal. And there's knowledge in there that came from knowing, not, you know what? And that's a important statement. Knowledge that came from knowing, because there's knowledge out there that also comes from stupidity, and you can't fix stupid. You know what I mean? So knowledge from knowing, right? All right. Anyway, when you have to look at the interpretation of art and the message, this is their introduction. This is people trying to bring her out, you know, and often the artists that didn't work for any kind of Catholic entity or whatever that came about, because, you know, you go against them, they'll cut you into little pieces. They're more like, you know, say that you're evil and they burn you at the stake, And they did that to people that they liked. Imagine that someone they didn't like. So Michelangelo painted her as this gorgeous woman, you know, all the poets captivated, right? How could you not be? Because it's an unbelievable love story, isn't it? But beyond that, it's a story of a struggle. So then you got modern feminists, right? They celebrate the struggle for independence from Adam. Right, you mean? So, but I see it as more than that. And that's the problem with feminists, man. It's not independence, because in life, it's important to have relationships. It's important to have people around you, that community. You know what I mean? It takes the village, that they say. It's important to, in a relationship with another person, no matter if they're male or female, whatever you got going on, it's important to have that connection and that bond and that loyalty. There's a lot of stuff in there. So you can be independent, but still have someone there for you, right? So it wasn't the struggle of independence from Adam. Lilith wanted equality with Adam, to be equal, and she wanted to be on top. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So anyway, her name appears as the title of a Jewish woman's magazine and also a national literacy program. An annual music festival that donates with profits to battered women's shelters and breast cancer research institutes all around is called the Lilith Fair. So here are people, modern day age, breathing life into Lilith, kind of digging up some truths. Okay, but this goes deeper than that, man. Deeper than that. So in most modern manifestations of her myth, Lilith, you know, she represents chaos, right? Seduction, ungodliness, you know? So, but yet in her every guise, as you see Lilith, see, this is like what they say about her. But what she does is all good works And it's really funny how this is like, guilty on the stand without any evidence. And then just what people say, because they don't like her, a bunch of haters, man, And let me tell you, in those days, there was a lot of haters. A lot of ignorant people, a lot of stupid people, a lot of haters. You can educate ignorant, but like I said before, you can't fix stupid. So anyway, the ancient name Lilith derives from a Sumerian word for female demons or wind spirits. Wind spirits. So on one hand, you got female demons. On the other hand, you got wind spirits. Now, I don't know about you. The wind spirits don't seem too threatening to me. If you throw some female demons at me, I'm going to be like, okay, it's a party, but all right. I know what I'm dealing with, female demons, But wind spirits, okay. So the Litiu and the related Ardat Lily, this is what she was also known as. The Litiu dwells in desert lands and open country spaces, and especially dangerous to pregnant women and infants. Right? Her breasts are filled with poison, not milk. And the Ardat, wasn't there some dude who came up with that, right? You just know that there was some little short 5'1" guy, angry little hater, saying her breasts are filled with poison, not milk. Right? What kind of real dude would write something like that about a woman? You know, talk about someone's breasts and talking about poison. The Ardat Lily is a sexually frustrated and infertile female who behaves aggressively towards young men. I've been down that block, that Bleecker Street, during the 80s, man. I'll tell you. But don't you see again, you have, it's a sexual type of anger from the person writing it. The one writing this stuff, they're not observing the good work she's doing, because she did some good work, so I'm getting to it. They're painting her as this demon, this terrible, terrible thing. The worst possible thing you can think of is Lilith, because she wanted equality. She didn't do terrible stuff. She didn't light the Garden of Eden on fire. She didn't chop off Adam's little ween. She didn't do anything like that. You know what? She wanted equality. And because of that, she wasn't just slapped down. She was sent out into the barrenness of the world. What a message for other women down the line. If you want equality, you will be banished, not only from your family, but not from the garden, but from everything. And then you're not just banished, but vilified for thousands of years. That's pretty deep. That's people, huh? So the earliest surviving mention of Lilith's name appears in Gilgamesh and the Hulupu tree. So a Sumerian epic poem found on a tablet at Ur and dating from approximately 2000 BCE. The mighty ruler Gilgamesh is the world's first literary hero, right? He boldly slays monsters and vainly searches for the secret to eternal life. In one episode, after heaven and earth had separated and man had been created, and this is very interesting. Listen to this. This is like some cool stuff, man. Gilgamesh rushes to assist in Inanna, a goddess of erotic love and war, right? Gilgamesh is like, I got to get to Inanna. She needs me, man. She's my goddess of erotic love and war. In her garden, near the Euphrates River, Inanna lovingly tends to a willow, a hulupu tree, the wood of which she hopes to fashion into a throne and bed for herself, right? So here's Inanna, the goddess, of erotic love and war. All right, keep that in mind. And as she wants to take these trees and destroy them and make them into her own thing. You know what I mean? So Now she's going to use this wood and a throne and bed for herself. And Anna's plans are nearly thwarted, however, when a dastardly triumvirate possesses the tree. One of the villains, and then, you know, a lot of cultures say spirits live in trees and they protect the trees so you don't kill the trees. That's also very interesting to me. Okay, but now one of the villains protecting this tree is Lilith. And Anna, to her chagrin, found herself unable to realize her hopes. So, for in the meantime, a dragon had set up a nest at the base of the tree, and the zoo bird had placed its young in its crown. So it was a place of protection for this zoo bird, and then the dragon was protecting it overall. So, and you know, in a lot of cultures, maybe not people from this area, but you go into other cultures around the world, dragons are held in very high regard, right? Very. So English people like to slay them. That's their compensation for not being everything that they can be internally, you know. So they're external. It's not like saving the village, I have to slay this dragon. But that was their image of, hey, look at me, I'm a tough guy, I did this, right? So anyway. Okay. Okay, so the zoo bird, all right, the zoo bird had placed its young in its crown, like I said, and in the midst of the tree, the demoness Lilith had built her house. So Lilith moves into the tree. She's got the zoo bird above her. She's got the dragon beneath her. Life's pretty good, man. Wearing heavy armor, brave Gilgamesh comes and kills the dragon, slays the dragon, causing the zoo bird to fly to the mountains and a terrified Lilith to flee to the desert. Do you really think Lilith, being that they painted her as this unbelievably powerful demon, would run away scared from a dude with a sword, right? I don't know. Very interesting. So, in another bit, in the 1930s, scholars identified the voluptuous woman on a terracotta plaque called the Burney Relief and the Babylonian demoness Lilith. Today, the figure is generally identified as the goddess of love and war known as Inanna. So isn't that interesting how at one point the two of them bonded together? So is it Lilith? Or is it Inanna? Okay. So it was Inanna to the Sumerians and Ishtar and the later Arcadians. Both characters are featured in the poem Gilgamesh, read to you, right? The woman wears, and there's an image of her, it's actually a statue. The woman wears a horned crown and has the wings and feet of a bird. She is flanked by owls associated with Lilith. Lilith associated with owls, all right? How bad could she be? I love owls. And she stands on the backs of two lions, symbols of Inanna. So now we're seeing two figures, which are virtually the same, being brought together. You know, and we see this a lot. Oh man, you know, the story of Jesus, there was another dozen people that had the same story, including a horse. Same story. You know what? Virgin birth, you know, the whole being, oh man, one was sold for 30 pieces of silver, the other sold was for 30 pieces of gold. I mean, really, I born under the bright star, the whole bit. Identical stories, man. And there was a dozen of them. So, but now we're seeing these two. This is what's interesting to me, right? So, according to Mesopotamian myths, the demoness Lilith, Litu, or that Lily, flew at night, seducing men, killing pregnant women and babies. This night creature makes one appearance in the Bible. I already read all that already. But here we go. Now, in the King James Version, Lilith is translated as screech owl. right? So, all right. Now, originating, we have that terracotta plaque. That's the same time as the Gilgamesh epic, the whole pictorial representation of Lilith and of Inanna. So, and this is, I'm going to link this up for you guys, and you'd be like, wow. So now, in early incantations against Lilith, she travels on demon wings, a conventional mode of transportation for underworld residents at that time. There was no NetJet or, you know, Delta, nothing like that. So dating from the 7th or 8th century BCE is a limestone wall plaque discovered in Argentash, Syria in 1933, which contains a horrific mention of Lilith. The tablet probably hung in the house of a pregnant woman and served as an amulet against Lilith, who believed to be lurking at the door, figuratively blocking the light. So here are a bunch of people running amok, worried about Lilith is going to take their baby when stuff happens. You know, people like they blame it. Oh, I got this terrible disease. It's just, you know, it's the demon that did it. It's a demon doing it to me, man. The demon did it to me. People blame, they blame their own crappy actions on demons. That too? Yeah. That's people, man. They don't want to take any responsibility for the stuff that they do. All right. So you have plaques. Okay, it's like, you know, when I was a kid, we went to Amish country. My mom, we went on a little vacation to Pennsylvania. Visit some family. Visited these barns and whatever, and they have these cool hexagrams, whatever, man. And just things that ward off evil spirits and these little signs that, like, protect wildlife or protect the farm and that type of thing. I thought it was interesting. It's cool, cool artwork. It means, you know, a hell of a lot to them. That's for sure. But everything comes from somewhere. At some point, someone thought that was a good thing, hanging something up to protect the wildlife, some kind of maybe magically charged vessel. I mean, if you're putting that kind of energy into it, that's really what it is. The word magic really should be transferred to the word energy, because that's really what you're doing. You're putting energy into these things, right? All right. So over time, people throughout the Near East became increasingly familiar with the myth of Lilith. In the Bible, she's mentioned only once, in Isaiah 34, right? And you know what? I'm going to read that for you, man, because I can't read this whole freaking thing. It goes on for a long time, but I'll read you the important part, because they mentioned her as a screech owl, you know. So, here's Lilith. Wildcats will meet hyenas. The goat demon will call to his friends, and there Lilith will lurk and find her resting place. This is all about, it sounds like a club I've been to in the city on the Lower East Side a long time ago, man. But the wild beasts of the desert shall also meet with the wild beasts of the island. You know what? These guys who wrote this stuff had a lot of time on their hands. And in the translation, I've seen things translated for real from like Aramaic into English, which is very, very, very difficult for them to do. I've seen these things. I've seen it translated all kinds of ways, but really then when it's translated by someone who knows what they're doing, it changes the whole meaning of a sentence. A couple of words can just change everything, you know. And you also have to understand the intention behind the words, you know, the emotion behind the words, right? So, okay, aside from Isaiah, and they put that little bit in the Bible, which is a huge deal. That little tiny bit is gigantic, because it was something they didn't want to talk about. It was something they felt compelled to mention, but clearly didn't want to talk about. Okay. So the book of Isaiah is a compendium of Hebrew prophecy spanning many years. The book's first 39 chapters, frequently referred to as First Isaiah, can be assigned to the time when the prophet lived, approximately 742 to 701 BCE. Right? Throughout the book of Isaiah, the prophet encourages God's people to avoid, now listen to this, man, he encourages God's people to avoid entanglements with foreigners who worship alien deities. Alien deities. Really? Now, you know, ancient alien-wise, these fallen angels that came from the sky were the ones who built everything, basically, and gave the technology and knowledge to the people that were around. And maybe even created a hell of a lot of hybrids. Maybe your Garden of Eden was a lab instead, something like that. It doesn't seem like the original story holds water with all the lofty notions of, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to apply technology to it. And I understand about energy. I understand about technology. I understand the technology that we have now, which is pretty amazing. And it's nothing compared to what civilizations could have that could have existed for millions of more years. Right. So when I think of these goddesses, I look into, you know, India and their culture. And they also have a female goddess that's very much like, and this is going to link it all up for you because we're talking about the same person. And that story about, you know, Iana wanting to go to this tree, use the wood for a throne, and then the dragon, the bird, the dude with the sword, with the dragon, and then who was it who built her home in the tree? And also owls do that, right? Very interesting. So, okay. So anyway, according to, right. So in chapter 34 of this book of Isaiah, a sword-wielding Yahweh seeks vengeance on the infidel Edomites. Perennial outsiders and foes of the ancient Israelites. So people can't get along. You know what I mean? You notice that? Like, people just can't get along, no matter what. You know? So this all happened in this chaotic scene in desert land where the soil is infertile and the wild animals roam, right? And it says, wild cats shall meet hyenas. I just read it anyway. Goat demons shall greet each other. And there too the Lilith shall repose and find herself a resting place. She's going to chill, Lilith, right? The Lilith demon was apparently so well known to Isaiah's audience that no explanation of her identity was necessary. It's like Voldemort, you know, like you said, the name that should not be named. Don't say their name, right? So, and the evil Lilith is depicted on they found a ceramic bowl from Mesopotamia. They didn't like her then. They blamed everything on it. Probably got a bad meal. It was like Lilith's fault. They must have been bugged out at night listening to owls. Be like, it's Lilith, ball. You know, like those old legends and stuff, like when people come up with these stories, you know, and you're growing up in your hometown, you always hear, there's always stories about something somewhere in your town or the town next to you about somebody doing something, whatever, right? Always. And that's what, you know, these tell stories around campfires and things like that to bug people out. I tell stories of like my ghost hunting and that bugs people. I show them some pictures and that bugs people out. They're like, stop. This isn't fun anymore. Whoa, you didn't say you wanted to have fun. You just said you wanted a ghost story. I'll tell you some ghost stories. I got a few. So anyway, the Isaiah passage lacks the specifics in describing Lilith, but it locates her in desolate places, you know. So she's out in the desert. She's out in Crabville. She's out in the middle of nowhere, man. She's stuck, you know, because that's where they banished her. Do you really think this beautiful woman, this goddess of love and war? Love and war. Of course. Of course. Right? Erotic. Yeah, man. I get that. I get it. The Bible verse thus links Lilith directly to the demon of the Gilgamesh epic who flees into the desert. But it comes out the same person. All right? So which is it? A duality? You know, a woman with multiple personalities? I've dealt with that. I've dealt with that. All right? The wilderness, so the wilderness traditionally symbolizes mental and physical barrenness, right? It is a place where creativity and life itself are easily extinguished. Ah, for some. But you can go into that wilderness. You can go into those woods. You can go back in there and you will find a sage sitting there writing, doing their thing, living very happily away from people. Just saying. Just saying. So Lilith, the feminine opposite of masculine order, is what they view it as, is banished from fertile territory and exiled to the barren wasteland. But the wasteland is not so barren, because that's where life happens, the wilderness. That's where life happens. And I don't see it as Lilith is this masculine opposite. I see it as a yin and yang thing of the whole coevolution being together, each of those entities having a part of one another, swirling around in harmony. Doesn't exactly happen like that all the time, but it does for some. Not me, but it does for some. But my thing, you see, when I look at this stuff, my mind just kind of dissects it, puts it into a critical thinking order, and it's like, of course. Because these stories, no matter how old and epic, they all come from somewhere, right? So anyway, so English translators of Isaiah 34:14 sometimes lack confidence in their readers' knowledge of Babylonian demonology. The King James Bible's prose rendition of the poem translates the Lilith as the screech owl, recalling the ominous bird-like qualities of the Babylonian she-demon, right? But what do screech owls do? They freaking get rid of all the mice and all the crap in your yard. You know, it protects people. They protect people. All these creatures, same for snakes, they all have a job, and their job is survival. And in that survival, it balances everything out. I love owls. I have a kinship with owls. I have a deep connection. There are two birds, well, owl species. I love them all, man. But really, and also ravens. Ravens are always around. Ravens are always there, man. I love how they fly. I love how they soar. I love watching ravens on windy, blustery days, and they're way, way up by the clouds, man. They're in the sky. They're not up there looking for food. They're not up there looking for some mate. They're up there soaring and having a brilliant time doing it. See? That's freedom. I love that. Anyway. So now the revised standard version of this picks up her whole nocturnal habits and tags her the night hag instead of the Lilith. So how many times can you insult this woman? You know, what happened to the Me Too movement? Me Too, Lilith. Night hag, calling her all this demon, pregnant women. You know what I mean? They call her the night monster. The Hebrew text and its best translations employ the word Lilith in the Isaiah passage, but other versions are true to her ancient image as a bird, night creature, and bedlam, like a hag. While Lilith is not mentioned again in the Bible, she does resurface in the Dead Sea Scrolls found at Qumran. The Qumran sect was engrossed with demonology, and Lilith appears in the Song for a Sage. The Song for a Sage! You get it? Wilderness, sage, the goddess, love and eroticism, war. A hymn possibly used in exorcisms, the Song for a Sage. See, possibly. And I, the sage, sound the majesty of his beauty to terrify and confound all the spirits of destroying angels and the bastard spirits, the demons, Lilith, and those that strike suddenly to lead astray the spirit of understanding and to make desolate their heart. So the Qumran community was surely familiar with the Isaiah passage, and the Bible's sketchy characterization of Lilith is echoed by this this liturgical Dead Sea Scroll. Lilith may also appear in a Dead Sea Scroll, in a second Dead Sea Scroll. Okay, so centuries after, I'm laughing because it's so obvious. It's just brutally obvious what they did to this image of this woman, you know, and why. And why, more importantly, right? So centuries after the Dead Sea Scrolls were written, you know, learned rabbis completed the Babylonian Talmud, the final editing, circa 500 to 600 BC, and female demons journeyed into scholarly Jewish inquiries. The Talmud, the name comes from a Hebrew word meaning study, is a compendium of legal discussions, tales, and great rabbis, and meditations on Bible passages. People toot their own horn, right? Talmudic references to Lilith are few, but they provide a glimpse of what intellectuals thought about her. The Talmud's Lilith recalls older Babylonian images, for she has long hair and wings. The Talmud's image of Lilith also reinforces older impressions of her as a succubus, a demon in female form who had sex with men while the men were sleeping. There you go. Had sex with men while the men were sleeping. Unwholesome sexual practices are linked to Lilith, as she powerfully embodies the demon's lover's myth. You know what? I think that I found a woman. You know what I mean? Maybe a little right at the wrong time, but damn, she's just misunderstood. I know, I know. We've all been there. Talmudic reference claims that people should not sleep alone at night, lest Lilith slay them. The Shabbat, 151b, during the 130-year period between the death of Abel and the birth of Seth, the Talmud reports a distraught Adam separates himself from Eve during the time, because he can't get Lilith out of his mind. He says she was the best. You know, Eve is like, you bastard. You bastard. Adam's like, you don't understand, baby. I'm sorry. You just don't understand. I need my Lilith. During this time, he becomes the father of ghosts and male demons and female. You see? You see? Adam went to find Eve. She's out in the barrenness. And then boom, 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 shaboom, shaboom. Couple male, little male, female, demons. All right. So, and those who tried to construct the Tower of Babel, and turned in, they have been turned into apes, spirits, devils, and night demons. They're very limited. You know what I mean? Like if you think about people like if you watch a horror movie, what the person who creates that horror movie thinks what is going to scare you, the viewer, right? And humans are very limited. They'll show people in, like, you know, zombies, people in decay, or messed up, an eyeball hanging down. The one thing I don't get about all zombie movies, every last one of them, every zombie TV show, zombie movie, the one thing that I don't understand is how they all keep their pants on. You know what I mean? Is this someone going around kind of picking their pants back up again? Because, you know, you gotta like adjust your pants. I mean, I adjust my pants. Maybe I'm different. Maybe nobody out there in the world adjusts their pants. A belt doesn't keep your pants on, really, unless you got some really, you know, kind of skinny hip. You gotta keep that belt on there. Maybe some zombies wearing suspenders. Now I could see that. I could see that. That would make more sense to me. But in my zombie movies, they don't have to be half naked. Because, you know, how do you keep even keeping your clothes on, rubbing against trees and stuff or other zombies attacking you? You know what I mean? Very weird. Very. All right. Getting back to this, about the time the Talmud was completed, people living in the Jewish colony of Nippur in Babylonia also knew of Lilith. Her image has been unearthed on numerous ceramic bowls known as the incantation bowls, right? And so obviously someone sold those bowls. Somebody made them. Somebody sold them. This is like a sales ploy. Keep the bad spirits out of your house. Buy this bowl. You know what I mean? So for the Aramaic spells, they bought it for the Aramaic spells inscribed on them. If the Talmud demonstrates what scholars thought about Lilith, the incantation bowls dating from approximately 600 CE show what average citizens believed at that time. The one bowl now on display at Harvard University's Semitic Museum reads, thou Lilith, hag and snatcher, I adjure you by, I'll finish reading it before I comment. I adjure you by the strong one of Abraham, by the rock of Isaac, by the Shaddai of Jacob, no women in there, to turn away from this Rashnoi. And you know what? And from Gehoni, her husband, you're divorced and writ, and a letter of separation sent through holy angels. Amen, amen. All right, you see, this is a male, this is like male centric. Obviously, these guys, they don't have any information to go by. And they're really blaming. It's not like she was some kind of conqueror of the time. Comes out, cuts little babies' heads off and eats their livers. And, you know, there are people around like that. There were people in charge like that and during this time all over. They didn't vilify those people. They're vilifying this woman who her only crime, if you can call it that, and they did, was ask for equality. Not just ask for it, but demand it. Right? Okay. Until the 7th century of CE, Lilith was known as a dangerous embodiment of dark feminine powers. In the Middle Ages, however, the Babylonian she-demon took on a new and even more sinister characteristic. Sometime prior to that year, 1000, the alphabet of Ben Sira was introduced to medieval Jewry. The alphabet, an anonymous text, contains 22 episodes corresponding to 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. The fifth episode includes a Lilith who was to tantalize and terrify the population for generations to come. To some extent, the alphabet of Ben Sira shown a familiar Lilith. She is destructive. She can fly. She has a penchant for sex. Yet, you know what? And it's always sex. These guys always do that, don't they? When they write about these women, they sexualize them. Always. Oh, take sex out of the equation, why don't you? And then what's left, you know? Interesting. It's very lowbrow. All right. Now this tale has a new twist. which we always knew that. And Adam, I like how they had Eve leave the garden to console Lilith. That's women. You know what I mean? There's the sisterhood, man. If you don't know the sisterhood, women are always in competition. Yes. Women have a thing, but the sisterhood, men will never understand the sisterhood, the true sisterhood, right? I have secret information because I study. I'm a researcher. I'm a researcher, damn it. But really, the sisterhood. All right. So the biblical story and the creation of Lilith, you know why they did it? They did it to scare the bejesus out of people. So they give them money and they don't mess around, right? And Lilith was known as, for a while, as Satan's wife. Satan's wife. The devil's wife. You know what I mean? I mean, really, if you want to make people the villain, that's the way to make them the villain. But of course, Satan wasn't even mentioned for a long time, you know. And if you believe the original story, it was an angel. Satan was an angel, right? They had a big fight, tried to take over. It didn't like the way God ran things. And then Michael, Archangel, comes along and throws Satan out of heaven down to earth, not to hell. This is very important to understand that Satan went down to earth. Earth. Want to know why things are so bad? So I like the fact that it really goes back. I mean, and you know what? Then people have come along and put their own little twist on Lilith. I think Lilith is very misunderstood. And I think that just like, you know, any of these folklore tales you'll find through a lot of villages throughout the past, even today, you know, you'll find, like I said, you know, the town that you grew up in will always have these stories, right? Just like these folklore stories, people will take that and blame it on that unknown entity that came and snatched your baby, or you had a miscarriage. Automatically, it was Lilith, right? So I read another story about Lilith who went out and got together with Satan and made a whole bunch of babies. Demon babies. Would they be a demon? Or would they be like Satan Jr.? You know what I mean? I don't know. There's a lot of crazy stuff, man. I think that people used to sit together and drink a lot of mead and whatever the hell they were drinking at the time. Be like Moses tripping on some mushrooms or acid. They said Moses would take hallucinogenics when he went up to the mountain, right? He came down with the Ten Commandments. He's on some hallucinogenics. I get that. You know, but all right. So I think that you can look all the way through history and see that other beings could have very easily had their hand in things. And those things were definitely misinterpreted. But when it comes to Lilith, and this is the beginning, man, you go on Adam and Eve. And before it was Adam and Lilith, growing up, and my family was Catholic. I didn't go to Catholic school. I didn't get into any of that. My mom said she wouldn't do it to me, you know, but, cause she went to Catholic school. She says she wouldn't do that to me. You know, she had a very good experience, but I mean, you know, that was a long time ago too. So maybe different now. Right. But anyway, you understand where things come from. Right. And especially in religion, they really try to keep people as tight as possible and uninformed. So they can just kind of suck the money out of your wallet. And that's really that for that, you know? And I think that if you follow the money, the stories start making sense. When I look at Lilith and all the stuff that she's done, supposedly, not like snatching babies or whatever. Come on, man. Every village has some story of some banshee or something coming and causing some misfortune, right? And there's a whole Chinese story about misfortune. I don't even know if I have freaking time because we started late to begin with. I got some time. I got a couple minutes. So let me tell you, right? I don't know if I can even remember the stupid story, but it's the story of misfortune, right? Whereas there was a guy in a village, and then the guy finds this awesome pony, and you know, people come and like, "Oh my God, you're so fortunate that you have this beautiful pony. You know, it's so amazing, and that you found this. It's such a great thing." You know, and then, yeah, very fortunate. You know, so the next day the pony runs away and it's gone. And then people came and said, "Oh, you know, your pony, you ran away. It's so unfortunate for you, you know." And then, and I'll make a long story short. So at the end of it, this guy in the village ends up, there was going to be this big freaking brawl going on with another village, right? So all these warriors are gearing up to go fight. And this guy who lost his pony or whatever and has this misfortune and fortune going back and forth breaks his leg. So the people in the village, "Oh my God, you're just so unfortunate for breaking your leg." He broke his leg. He couldn't go to the battle. The next day they had the battle and all these warriors in the village were killed. And he would have been killed too. And then people say, "Oh, you're so fortunate that you weren't there." So fortune and misfortune comes in a matter of perspective and also a matter of time and timeline, right? So when it comes to Lilith, I like the original, she wanted equality. And because of that, she was cast out by people, humans, by the way, who wrote the story, who didn't like her grab for equality, right? They didn't like it. And then what'd they do? They vilified her for centuries, man, centuries. So talk about it, injustice, you know, in this day and age. I think that people should start coming to terms with their demons. Anyway, this is Michael Angley on Discovery Paranormal. Hope you enjoyed the show. I will see you guys next week on this show. United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 in New Orleans. Whoa! Pastor Jan, that too. And Buffalo, New York, and Syracuse, New York, and Pakistan, and Iran. Frick, all over the world, everywhere, 181 countries, man. That's pretty deep. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.